I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. We've been covering President Trump's zero-tolerance policy for weeks now, where almost every person caught crossing the southern border had been referred for criminal prosecution. But as zero-tolerance policy has moved the majority of people to criminal courts, there's still a backlog of 700,000 cases waiting for their day in immigration court. Today, what the Trump administration's immigration policies beyond zero-tolerance mean for immigration courts in the U.S., and the people who have to navigate them. Judge Ashley Tabador is president of the National Association of Immigration Judges, and she sees the changes to immigration policy under Trump from the bench. Judge Tabador, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
So, Judge, before zero tolerance, what happened when someone crossed the border illegally? When did they actually end up before a judge in immigration court?
Before the zero tolerance policies, people were generally processed through the civil immigration enforcement options for the Department of Homeland Security rather than the criminal option that zero tolerance policy emphasizes. So what that means is that people were put into immigration court proceedings and given an opportunity to raise any claims for asylum. But with zero tolerance policy, my understanding is that they are prosecuted for having entered the country without authorization first, and then determined whether or not they have a claim for asylum.
Now, I just want to clarify, because a lot of our listeners and we have seen photos of groups of migrants who are wearing orange jumpsuits who are being tried in groups. Just to clarify for those who may not be aware, those images are from criminal court proceedings, correct? And that's different from what we're talking about today.
So the criminal court proceedings under zero tolerance are completely separate and apart from the immigration court proceedings. The criminal court proceedings are before district court judges, and those are judges who have been appointed to the bench by a president and have been confirmed to that position by Senate. And they are part of the judicial branch. The immigration court is separate and apart from the district court. We are part of the Department of Justice, which is frankly one of the problems we've had to deal with, because as a court, there's an inherent conflict to be a part of a prosecutorial department headed by the number one prosecutor in the country.
Who right now is Attorney General Sessions.
Yes.
So sticking with the immigration court specifically, how many people are there in the United States today who are waiting for their day in immigration court?
Well, the last statistics that I was aware of is that it was about to hit 700,000 a few months ago, and that would mean 700,000 cases waiting for about 330 judges across the country. I believe the current numbers are upwards of maybe 715 or closer to 720,000 cases.
And I just want to make sure I have those numbers right. You said 700,000 cases, 330 judges, correct?
Yes, you can imagine our daily load. Yes.
That seems like a very heavy load. And I want to ask you a little bit about whether that's going to increase, because in May, Attorney General Sessions announced new rules for immigration judges, correct?
In spring or end of March, the Attorney General announced that he would like to subject immigration judges to quotas and deadlines effective October, which is going to, in our opinion, it's going to add to the backlog because it is going to increase appeals and it is going to undermine the integrity of the court.
Let's talk a little bit, too, about the impact. Like we mentioned 700,000 cases. What is the risk of these cases not being seen or heard in time, or potentially, from what I'm understanding, sort of quickly going through these cases? Is there a risk to the person who's waiting for their day in court? It seems as though perhaps speeding the process up might benefit that person or not.
Anytime you artificially speed up the process, you run the risk of violating or in some way compromising the integrity of the case. So every case is entitled to what's called due process. And due process means that the judge must ensure a fundamentally fair hearing before the court and a decision that is limited to just the facts of the case based on the law of the land. So if you then impose some sort of an artificial time frame within which a case has to be completed, that that is completely divorced from the needs or the specific facts of the case, then that is going to compromise the integrity of the case. The problem is when you introduce an artificial number. Our judges are hearing different types of cases with different demands across the country. You can have a judge maybe at a border court who's hearing 10 or 20 cases of individuals a day who do not want to fight their case because they are serious criminals. So if you have very serious criminal convictions, the person may come to court, realize after having heard what the rights and responsibilities are that it's not a case that they want to fight. So the judge can handle 15, 20 cases a day. But another judge across the country who may be hearing complex asylum cases can potentially complete just one case a day because it could have hundreds of pages of filings. It could have expert testimony, hours of hearing the person's testimony. So if you are trying to put the two judges on the same field and pretend that they are handling the same types of cases, you're seriously misunderstanding how the court system works. There is no question that our judges, every one of us is committed to making sure everyone gets due process and gets to come before the court as soon as possible. But we really cannot be subjected to these artificial quotas and deadlines because it undermines the integrity of the court. And people who come in are going to start wondering, is the judge making decisions because the judge is worried about keeping her job? If a mundane question, you know, if a routine request to continue your case is denied, are they going to wonder that it's denied because the judge is afraid that they're not going to meet a deadline? If if someone's questioning is being cut off because it's not relevant to the case, would the person start arguing that the judge is doing that because they want to add another case for the day to add one more completion for the week? So these are the problems of trying to introduce quotas and deadlines instead of letting judges be judges.
Does it also impact your discretion as a judge? I'm curious about what, when you get leadership, should I say, or edicts, if you will, from up high, from the DOJ, what are judges feeling about that? Is there a sense of powerlessness? Is there a sense of frustration?
The judge's morale has been the lowest in many, many years. We have, in fact, have been dealing with a lot of pressure to complete cases for a long time because for years and years, the judges and the courts have been treated basically as second-class citizens themselves. The law enforcement have been given or have had their budgets tripled or quadrupled over the years, but the court's budget has not kept up. That's frankly one of the problems of being in a Department of Justice headed by a prosecutor is that when budgeting has to be decided, the money first goes to all law enforcement agencies and whatever's left is then trickled down to the immigration court. So we've seen situations where the backlog has grown and grown and grown because law enforcement has been given disproportionate budgeting to the immigration court system. So the judges have been dealing with a lot of pressures as is. And now to then be subjected to quotas and deadlines is frankly insulting because implicit in any sort of quota and deadline is some sort of assumption that the judges need to be incentivized to work faster and do more because somehow they haven't been doing enough or haven't been completing enough cases fast enough, which is not the case.
And, you know, speaking about judges, last week we saw the president tweet, and I'm going to read you quoting from the tweet, "We shouldn't be hiring judges by the thousands. As our ridiculous immigration laws demand, we should be changing our laws, building the wall, hire border agents and ICE, and not let people come into our country based on the legal phase they are told to say as their password." Judge Tabador, your response to that?
Well, we are a democracy. We are a beacon of democracy for the world. And part of democracy is following the rule of law. And our Constitution guarantees due process for all persons who are in the United States. And due process requires that you have an opportunity to present your case before the court when you are fleeing for your life from places like Middle East or places like China where you are being persecuted for religious, just adhering to your Christianity or religious beliefs. I think I can certainly understand that there is a commitment, and we're all committed to make sure that our immigration laws are being honored. But part of our immigration laws is recognizing that there is a rule of law, and democracy requires that we hold ourselves out according to the laws of our nation.
Judge Ashley Tabador is an immigration judge and president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. Judge Tabador, thank you for your time.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.